Good morning, everybody. Great to see you. Welcome to St. Thomas Crooks, aka STC. And I've smudged my glasses, so I've got that kind of, you know, if you wear glasses, you've got the slight smudge, or maybe if you don't wear glasses, you've probably got no, you don't care. Anyway, it's great to see you. For those who've travelled a distance to be here today, you're really welcome. It's great to have you here. For those who've come from down the road, it's great to have you with us. You are all welcome. And what we're going to do now is, every time we gather, we hear from the Bible for about an hour. I'm joking. I'm going to bring a message from the Bible. We're starting, we've been looking for the whole year about what it is to build community. And we're following a series of what that looks like when various different writers of the Bible have been writing to churches in different cities, in different places. And if you were here last week, you'll know that Bryony did an amazing talk. And if you get, Bryony's on our team, and she was talking about faith under pressure. I don't know whether you've ever experienced pressure. No one here can testify to ever hearing pressure. It's an amazing talk about how God uses some of the hardest times in life. And so I would very much recommend that you listen to that if you can. And you can access that on our website, stcsheffield.org. And today, I want us to think about love in action. And the way that I've thought about that is something called Mind the Gap. And that will become clearer, hopefully, as we go on. And so we're looking at James chapter 2. Last week was James chapter 1. I'm not going to read the whole of James chapter 2 because that is 26 verses, and that's quite a lot. But there are two halves to James chapter 2. Let me paint a very brief picture now. And if you want to, I would encourage you to read, if you weren't here last week to listen to Bryony's talk, but I would encourage you to read the whole of James chapter 2 at your own perusal, because it kind of makes sense of what it is I think I want us to say today. Essentially, James, who is a leader in the Jewish church in Jerusalem, is writing to people who have converted from Judaism to Christianity, who are scattered. The church has been persecuted, and in fear of their lives, people have scattered in different parts of the Middle East. And he's addressing a couple of things. He's addressing this issue of what is faith and a dichotomy between what is faith and deeds and how it lives out in real life. And the first thing he addresses, and we're not going to mention that today, but it is worth knowing about it, that there is an issue within the early churches as when they gather, when wealthy people who are known, people who are believers in Jesus, but sometimes just people who are visiting, are given the best seats in the house because they are wealthy. And what is happening is poorer people, peasants, slaves. And one of the beautiful things about the early church is that there was a real equality between people who were free and people who weren't. There was a reversal of that as they were booting out the wealthy people and giving them the best seats. And in James chapter 2, the first half, it's one of the most striking, challenging bits in the New Testament about economics and about how we treat the poor. There's a big chunk in the book of the Acts earlier in the New Testament, but this is dynamite. It's really challenging. And then what I'm going to explore today is about what this idea of faith and deeds. I've got two stories and a thought before we head off into the day. Is that cool? It better be cool because I can go on for hours. No, I'm joking. Right, okay. So we are reading, the scripture's going to appear on the screen. Hopefully you can see that, but if not, I'm going to read it to us. If you want to follow in the Bible that is in front of you, it's going to be on the screen, but if you want to follow on, it's in page 1214. So reading it, verse 19. You believe, James says, that there is one God. Good. You foolish person, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? Was not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together. And his faith was made by complete by what he did. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. And he was called God's friend. You see that as a person is considered righteous by what they do and not by faith alone. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Excellent. Well done. Okay, let me start with a story. My wife and I are attending every Thursday night here at church something called the Raising Children course. If you live within Sheffield or close by, I would totally recommend it. We've seen two babies be baptized today. Any parents in the house will know the challenge to raise children, and this course is amazing. One of the aspects of this course is to ask us to think about what our own family experiences were like growing up. And it's been quite interesting as I've reflected on some of that. And there's a couple of memories that I have of growing up. In my mind, I grew up in the 1980s. Anyone else wants to admit growing up in the 1980s? I can just remember every day being summer, and I can remember riding a BMX bike, and a friend down the road had a chopper bike. Yeah, anyone remember a chopper? I was so jealous of the chopper bike. Whatever happened to the chopper bike, I don't know. But there's a few other things that I remember. I grew up in the West Midlands. Any other people would like to admit that they're from the West Midlands? Hey, Burnhams, you've come home, it's wonderful. And part of the deal of growing up in the West Midlands is that my dad supports Aston Villa. In fact, here it is, the Villa ground, the hallowed Villa ground. In fact, he grew up literally about three streets away from Villa Park. So there was no choice for my dad that he was going to grow up a Villa fan. He is a passionate Villa fan. In fact, he would say that the reason that England are doing so well is because Gareth Southgate spent a couple of years at the Villa. Now, my dad, you're going to see him interviewed by Gary Lineker, because no one else that I've heard, I've been reading a little bit about the World Cup, no one has that view, only my dad. So I think it'd be awesome if the BBC could get him on. And here he is. Michael Finnemore is interviewed. What, basically? Basically, the reason they're so well is because Gareth Southgate's time at the Villa. That is my dad's theory. He believes it's going to come home. Football is going to come home because Gareth Southgate spent time at the Villa. God bless him. I don't know whether that's true, but that's what my dad believes. You see, so there was no choice for me that I grew up. If anybody asked me what team I was, there was a couple of options. You either supported Birmingham City. You supported West Bromwich Albion, the Baggies, or you supported the Villa. My neighbour Stan, he supported the Villa. Other neighbours supported the Villa. And whenever working men from the West Midlands meet, all they would talk about is the Villa. Top tip, you never say to shake. It's not a middle class way of doing it. You don't shake somebody's hand and give your name. You start with the Villa. See the match on Saturday. Terrible. That's how we talked. Talked about the Villa. And so much part of growing up, I remember every Saturday would almost feel like the same. We would drive to my nan's house Saturday afternoon, and there was a ritual that my dad would put on Radio West Midlands, okay, Radio WM. And you get the phone-ins. Well, if you want to hear to some comedy Brummies, you listen to the phone-ins on a Saturday evening. Driving along, people are in a queue, and they get through to the presenter called Frank C. And I remember this one guy. He'd obviously been on the phone for a while. He'd been in the queue, and he gets through. He's on local radio. This is his moment. And he obviously fluffs it when he said, "We've got Dave from Smethwick. Dave from Smethwick, you're live on air." He goes, "All right, Frank C. Anything you want to say? Up the Villa." Bang, phone down. That's Dave. Thank you, Dave from Smethwick. Very, very insightful. Thank you very much. That was it. But the truth was that I didn't really know, or still don't know, that much about football. I couldn't explain to you the offside rule. No one had ever explained it. It was assumed that I was a Villa fan, but I wasn't really a Villa. I just grew up with it. And in fact, I learned a technique that I'd learned from my dad. If I saw anybody in our locality who were Villa fans and knew by association that I was a Villa fan, because my dad's a Villa fan, he grew up, the Finnemores have lived in Birmingham for 300 years. We're Peaky Blinders, so don't mess. I would say this, because I didn't really know what to say, but I felt I couldn't drop my guard. I needed to give the pretense of being a Villa fan. Whatever anybody would say about the Villa, I would simply say this, which I'd learnt from my dad. Doug Ellis needs to get his checkbook out. Yeah. And that worked. Because they assumed that I was so initiated into the world of Aston Villa that I knew what I was doing. But I didn't. And you know, I grew up in church. My parents raised me. I was baptised, like little Joseph and Eleanor. In fact, my parents recorded that. It was in October of 1979. Or again, the wonderful broomy voices making promises to look after me and pray for me. It was amazing. But it was a few years in when I began to think, a bit like the Villa, is faith for me? Or is it just something that I've inherited? Does it make a difference in life? Was I approaching God and church in the same way I was approaching my knowledge of the Villa, just enough to get by, to give people some, to kind of con people that I was more into the Villa than I was. Was I doing that with faith? I remember I was part of a local church and I hated school. And when the kids that I tried to avoid at school, rightly, were welcomed into the youth group, and as one of them wrapped gaffer tape around my mate Jimmy's face, and then pulled it off, we felt, actually, this ain't for us. I was like the kid from About a Boy, kind of bowl haircut. And I looked at church, and I thought, I don't know if this is for me. I don't know if this is right. I don't know what I believe. And then some friends invited us to a different church, to a youth group. And I'll be honest, there were girls. And they invited us to go, and I'll never forget that moment that I met some people, some of the most amazing people that I'd met. And it wasn't what they said that they believed, but it was the way that they loved and the way that they made this geeky, bowl haircut little Brummy feel welcome. It was the antithesis of school. And it was the church. And I fell in love with Jesus. And I fell in love with the church in that moment. Faith and deeds. James is challenging faith and deeds. He's challenging a mindset that says, I have personal faith, but I don't have to live it out. If you've ever been to London and you've caught a tube train, and if you go to an underground where there's a kind of bendy station, there's probably a better way of explaining that, you'll notice that you will hear a continual announcement over a tannoy, please mind the gap. It's like, please mind the gap. Please mind the gap. Please mind the gap. There is a gap between the platform and the train, and you've got to be careful. James here is addressing a gap that can happen in our hearts and in our lives, the gap between faith and the gap between living it out. He's addressing that to the churches that he's writing to in the way that they're treating the poor. And he's addressing it now. He's particularly addressing a conversation. And he's taking quotes and conversations that have been floating around in the church. And they've been beginning to say, do you know, you can have faith, you don't have to have deeds. And he quotes this in verse 19. Let's have the next slide, please, Abby, if you may. He says, you believe in one God. What he's referring to here is one of the most famous prayers that the Jewish people would pray every day. It's called the Shema, or Shema, however you want to pronounce it. And it says this, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." That God, Yahweh, is one. He is over every other god. He is one. And he says, if you're going to follow God, you love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, and all of your strength. Every person that James is writing to will know exactly in that one little throwaway line exactly what he is referring to. You say there is one God. Good. And he's referring to this, that you love God with all of your heart. What does that mean? It means your heart is the central point of how you live in the ancient world. Your heart, how you behave with all of your soul. The soul in the Greek word, which most of the New Testament is written, is translated psyche, where we get psychology. With all of our thinking, in our emotions, with all of your mind, how you think, and with all of your strength. So he's saying this, that if you say that you are following in the ways of God, if you would attach that label to yourself, then there is a question. Is God one over your heart, the way you behave? Is he one over your soul? Is he one over your thinking? And is he one over your strength? Strength is another way of saying body. You see, there is a gap that is opening in the churches that James is writing to. And that gap is influenced by Greek philosophy that says this, that you can entertain thoughts about God intellectually, but you don't have to do anything about it physically. In fact, the body is not good, body bad, mind, intellectual pursuit of all things godly, that's good. And James is saying, no. It's about the whole thing. And then he says, if we just go back to the previous slide, Abby, he adds this, that Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself in Mark chapter 12. Love your neighbor as yourself. Why is Jesus saying that? And why, when James says that, are the people in the various churches going, yeah, we know what he's saying? Because in that one simple phrase that Jesus uses, it sums up some important wisdom in the Old Testament that goes something like this. You love the poor. In fact, in the book of Leviticus, it says, if you own land, you leave part of your land free so that people who don't have anything can come and feed off your land. And when you live and you have plenty, you give stuff away. And so in this one moment, James is challenging those who are saying, you separate out faith, belief. I just have a private faith. People say that. And them saying, well, I just do deeds. And he's saying, do you know, guys, at the very beginning in the Old Testament, it was always one. It was never meant to be separated, but it was always one. And if you love him, God, you are always called to love the person next to you as well. And something called dualism has got in, and it's separated faith and living. Sunday and Monday. Sacred, secular. That I have a private Sunday faith. And then I have a faith in the week that I don't want the two to mix. Undercover Christianity. Some people are so deep they've gone native. And that's what he's challenging. He's saying, Remember the first call. It was never, ever to be separate. It was always meant to be beautifully one. It was always meant to be whole. That's why he says you can't separate faith and works. They were always meant to be one. You see, for years, rightly, the church over the generations has guarded faith. We call that orthodoxy. And the Bible calls us to do that. But you know, we haven't been so good at calling to account orthopraxy, the way that we do it. And you know, for James, statements of faith are as much reflected in our bank balance as they are about what we actually believe. It's about how do we live this out. And so I want to leave us with one final story as we head into tomorrow. What does it look like to live this out? A friend of mine told me a story when I was at university. I did theology. My friend did theology. He was a few years ahead of me. He's probably one of the smartest people that I'd met. Just a really bright guy, a real thinker, a real reflector. And he was really frustrated. He really struggled with church. He really wrestled with faith. And he was just cynical. He had some bad experiences. And so he told me this story once when I asked him, why do you keep going? And this is the story that he told me. And I've not forgotten it. And I want to share it with you now. He grew up on the Isle of Man. Beautiful. I don't know if you've ever been, but it's a beautiful place. And he grew up on a small town within the Isle of Man. So it's a close community. People know each other. There was a lady, a Christian lady, who would say that she wasn't the most eloquent. She wasn't the most articulate. In fact, she didn't always like to talk about faith because she would say that she didn't have the words, the right words to say. She was just really aware of that. But what she could do was she was brilliant at baking, and she was amazing at baking cakes. So the way that she put her faith into practice was this, was when she heard that somebody was going for a hard time, they would get home and find a cake outside the door with a note, wrapped up with a little note. Somebody lost a job, they'd find a cake on the doorstep. Somebody had a bereavement, they'd find a cake on the doorstep. And in fact, in this little town on the Isle of Man, her cakes were legendary. Her daughter was studying medicine here in the mainland and was killed in a car accident. And the cake stopped. The community was challenged massively. This girl who'd grown up in this tiny community, whose mum was known for her kindness and her cakes, the cakes stopped. And then one day, word got round that somebody had lost their job. And they came home to find a cake with a note. When that lady started baking cakes the second time round, man, did they have an impact. I said to my friend, why? Why is that? And he said, when I heard of that cake, it spoke more to me than any sermon that I'd heard, any book that I had read. That here is a lady who hasn't got all the answers, who's wrestling with life, but he's choosing to serve, choosing to do something, choosing deeds. So my question for us today is this: what's in our hand? That lady baked cakes. What is it that we can do tomorrow as you head into the workplace, as you head to work and you're tired, or at the school gates and it's hot and you just want to get home and somebody says something and you think, this is my opportunity. Our team leader, talks the sound of the klaxon sound, the moments that we can say, demonstrate, do something. And I wonder whether in our small groups, as we meet, whether, yes, it is right to do the orthodoxy and ask what it is we believe, but also do the orthopraxy and ask those questions. Where can we put this stuff into practice and follow the heart of James as revealed in the scriptures? They were never meant to be separate, but bringing them back into one. And you know, I want to give you an invitation. Let's have invitation, please. I'd love you to ask the question over the next few days. Where is there a gap in your own life, in my life, between faith and action, faith and deeds? And an invitation to anybody here who lives close enough to Sheffield to be part of what it is we're doing here. This week, there'll be people gathered on Tuesday to get it, Natter, who are fantastic people, who are befriending people in the community, who perhaps have no family, who are perhaps lonely, and inviting them into their lives, faith into action. There'll be people on Tuesday afternoon, a food bank. Many people here are going to be doing that, serving people in some of the toughest situations, faith in action. There'll be people on Friday who are hanging with young people. There'll be people outside the door trying to say to people, there's a different way to live life. There'll be those of us gathering Thursday evening who are trying to ask the question, what does it look like to raise kids in this crazy world? Trying to figure it out, learning from others. Lots of stuff happening in communities in the life of this church. And I would say if you want to make a difference, then we haven't got it straight. We haven't got it sorted, as people who are part of this community will testify. But we want to do the best with what God has given us. And I'd love to invite you to be part of it. You would be so welcome.